Log Talk Radio.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go?
You see where we're going with this, Jay?
Sure.
Wait,
see it my way, see it your way. Different views.
We can work it out.
Oh, we can work it out. Hi, Dave.
Okay, that's the Beatles. Say hi, Jay. This hey, guess who's in the studio here?
For rebooting the news number 77, we have a guest.
Yeah. You want to say hello to the world?
Hey, everybody.
Who was that?
Guess the voice. Who is that?
Yeah. Who is this person?
It's the 77th one.
Yeah.
77. We've referred to this person.
WABC. They used to
come in on my gutters in New Jersey. We lived about a few blocks from the transmitter. It was huge.
There is nobody I know who has more of a romance with radio than Doc Searle.
I know. I'm breaking it off, though.
And what else do you have, Doc? You love radio? You love
photography?
Photography.
Right. I love blogging.
I love the internet.
I love connecting. I love conversation. I love relationship. I love hanging with people. I love drinking.
So our guest is Doc Searles, the net thinker, author, blogger, Project VRM pioneer, radio lover, internet romancer.
He comes to us from Berkman Center, the Internet Society.
Yep. And he's right. also a listener to the show. Am I right, Doc?
Yes, you are. And I haven't caught up lately. I was confessing to Dave earlier, but I am a listener.
So
to
you
the
won't
show.
Understand.
I haven't
anything.
Listened to all 77. I've probably listened to
nobody
a
has.
Pretty good
Not
number
even Dave.
Of them, though.
I don't listen to any of them. What are you talking about? I can't.
It's on my short list of podcasts that I listen to, though.
That's nice.
It's definitely on a short list.
Warms my heart.
Well,
probably,
we talk about things you care about. That's for sure.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about today, Jay?
Well, we do want to get what Doc has been thinking about WikiLeaks. I'm very interested in that because it's been obsessing myself and Dave quite a bit. I would love to talk a little bit about Project VRM with him.
Right. But you have a story to tell.
And
right?
I have a little story to tell, yeah.
Quite an exciting story, actually, I thought. Cloak and dagger?
A little bit, a tiny bit, yeah.
Cloakish, daggerish sort of thing. You want to start with that?
Well, sure. I got an email from someone I don't know who is connected to somebody else I don't know who is part of the Chaos Computing Club in Berlin, which is, I am told, the oldest organization of hackers in the world, or one of them, and a key support network for WikiLeaks. And Julian Assange has spoken to that group a number of times. They have an annual conference between Christmas and New Year's every year in Berlin, which is a big hackers conference. No doubt it'll be swarming with agents this year. But this person wanted to set up a meeting with me at NYU to talk about WikiLeaks, but also OpenLeaks, which is one of the spin-off for imitation organizations that have sprung up since the worldwide explosion of interest in WikiLeaks. And OpenLeaks is a little bit different, which I'll explain in a minute. So I met this person who described himself as a veteran of the Israeli hacking culture and industry at NYU. And we contacted this second person from Berlin by Skype, and his interest was in introducing OpenLeaks to the American press in hopes that people would start to use it. Now, Doc, what OpenLeaks is basically anonymizing technology that any news organization could download in order to build their own WikiLeaks, and it was
called Tor, right? T-O-R.
Yeah, it relies on Tor.
And Tor has been around for a while.
Tor has been around for a while and was actually initially supported by the government. And
I think it still is, actually.
Yeah, it's a big project, Tor, that has ongoing support from a number of different areas. So it relies on Tor, and their hope is that news organizations will, in effect, develop their own anonymous Dropbox and become their own WikiLeaks rather than having to rely on this third-party organization. And having read some of what I wrote about WikiLeaks and watched some of what I said on video, this person thought I might help kind of just introduce the OpenLeaks concept to the United States. And I said, well, I don't want to be involved in the organization because I don't think that's an appropriate role for me. I'm certainly interested in it because it's part of rebooting the news. It's part of this new system that's emerging that I'm trying to understand. And I know that my podcast partner, Dave Weiner, has a similar kind of interest, and we could certainly do a program on it, or we could hold an event at NYU, or we could, you know, talk about it with people who would be interested. We have links to the tech culture, to the press culture in New York. And so we kind of left it at that. That's the essence of what happened. And I haven't had any contact with them since, but the person behind OpenLeaks is Daniel Schmidt. That's his pen name. Who had often been described as number two within WikiLeaks, but is also breaking from Assange and starting this new organization. He's not happy with the way Assange has run WikiLeaks. And he's also writing a book about his experiences with Assange, which will apparently be out early next year. But OpenLeaks is actually only one of a number of such organizations. There's also Brussels Leaks for leaks from the European Community. And there are other organizations popping up around this. So
yeah, so this is going to be something like, you know, like blogging or like, you know, any number of other technologies that have taken off.
Yes.
Maybe there'll be tons of these.
So and Assange actually said we need more because they can't handle everything they have. They can't even come close to publishing what they have. So.
So in the meantime, there's been a lot of disinformation pushed around about WikiLeaks in the last week. You know, I made a, I had a mission a weekend ago, not this last weekend, but the weekend before. I realized I didn't have a really good grasp over the news flow coming out of WikiLeaks. It was all sort of vague to me, you know. I didn't, at that time, I hadn't even seen like one story that had come from it. So I had a, I made a decision to try to find the flow, you know, see if I could find the pulse of the story. And
you mean coming from the cables themselves?
Well, I don't want to read the cables if I don't have to, because I wouldn't, you know, it's like, you know, if I gave, if I, which I have published my source code, most programmers even wouldn't want to read it. It's like, it's a little bit too much information, and then most people wouldn't even know how to read it. Like, I wouldn't know how to read a cable from the government. I don't know what they mean. I don't know what's significant about it. So, to make a long story short, I did find the pulse, and there's a lot of great editorial stuff coming out about WikiLeaks, a lot of it coming from The Guardian, surprisingly. The Guardian, I think, is...
Guardian has zoomed ahead.
They have really embraced the whole story. I think The Times has sort of been, you know, lukewarm in its support. Bill Keller gave a talk at Harvard last week where he said, there's nothing in common between me and Julian Assange, which was not really very...
Well, he said he may be a journalist, but he's not the kind of journalist I am.
That's kind of like... Thanks a lot, Bill. It's, you know, in the meantime, we're trying to figure out how do we, you know, how do we protect free speech on the internet and those kinds of distinctions. You know, it's always been a problem, and ever since we started using the internet to, you know, to communicate, and ever since it started looking like it might be big, the government has been interested in trying to keep it from getting too big. And, you know, comments like that don't help.
Well, the whole question of who is a journalist I find more and more useless and counterproductive.
Right. And that was, so, you know, it's, I've gotten, I also did a thing called Tech Without Borders that came out today and got a ton of feedback on that from people. And it's been, yours was by the way, one of the best items of feedback I got, Jay.
Well, thank you.
You said, you know, why make it about the U.S. government? You know, make it about governments in general. And I thought that was great because there were other governments that were clamping down. This is techwithoutborders.org.
Yeah, it's a little statement, a statement of support, a manifesto of a kind in six sentences.
Right. And there were a lot of people who said I should be using the word journalism in there, and I resist doing that because, Because like what you said, we don't know what is and what isn't journalism, and it's a boring debate.
Yeah, it's kind of beside the point.
Well, it's usually people who try to draw that distinction are trying to ask for some privileges that they don't want other people to have.
Or they're trying to keep people out, yeah.
Yeah, and clearly that's not what we're experiencing.
I want to get Doc in here, but it reminds me of a great line in a Pauline Kael movie review of The Wanderers, which is about gangs in New York. And she refers to kids who think they own the streets because they keep other kids out of them. And that's what, who's a journalist? Who is a journalist? Is that kind of a question?
It's the story of life. It's what we all try to do, you know.
Doc,
have
you been as interested as we have been in this WikiLeaks thing? And is it in fact as a signal event as we have suggested on this podcast? What? Just tell us what your reaction and your attempt to grapple with this event has been like.
I think it's possible that WikiLeaks is the biggest thing to happen on the internet and to the internet since the graphical browser. I think it's an enormous thing, and I think it. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you. I think I said in somewhere that you actually changed my mind on it. I was like a lot of people, had a kind of other-handed view of it. Well, on the one hand, we. It's really great that a lot of this stuff is out there and it's exposed, but on the other hand, is it possible for us to do diplomacy and for statecraft to be conducted when all of the walls around the diplomatic process are broken open? And I came around on that. I think almost regardless of his original motivations and his political views, which if you read them from his documents running back to about 2006 or so, see the state, especially in the U.S. and I guess Britain and maybe Australia as well, as conspiracies rather than as legitimate governments,
right,
in a normal sense. But regardless of that, what he is doing is in fact a public service. And it's interesting. I mean, I've followed this stuff too. There's so many things. You know, WikiLeaks hint at Palestinian-Israeli cooperation, and the U.S. lobbied the Vatican for this and that, and stuff going on in Yemen and other places like that. I think that there's a need that civilization has to know what's going on, and I do agree with Assange that we've had secrecy to an excess that is pathological and destructive and counterproductive. I wonder if more wars could be avoided if there was more exposure. Without a doubt.
I mean, that was. Yeah. They had a one-hour documentary the Swedish TV had. I think Jay and I both watched it. A lot of other people did, and he said his goal wasn't even just to embarrass anybody or even really to expose anything, but to make sure that when they start these crazy wars like the war in Iraq, they should know that the actual story is going to come out very quickly, and so that kind of deception has a much less chance of actually sticking.
True. But why do you see it as possibly the biggest event on the internet since the graphical browser? Explain that a little bit, Doc.
Well, because it allows everybody to participate. It allows anybody and everybody to join in on the creation of the larger web interconnection of conversations and relationships that makes civilization. An interesting question too for me is I've been noodling with the idea of a protocol. So the internet that we know is in fact enabled by a bunch of protocols, which are just basically agreements between machines and software about how things are done. Before we had that, we had private protocols, we had closed protocols, we had protocols within, IBM's SNA, and we had protocols within digital something or other, and along came these new protocols that enabled anybody to communicate with anybody about anything. Email did that. I mean, some protocols that were developed by the IETF and some RFCs became what everybody used because it was open and out there. And what WikiLeaks does is very much a transformative part of possibly even the most. I don't even I'm guessing at that, but I'm but the most transformative thing that is being done and has been done so far to what we are now formally calling to a large degree journalism, which is basically anybody can publish, anybody can participate. And we throw these things freely into the world. I want to brag on Dave for a second by saying that, I mean, if you look up RSS on Wikipedia, you get 3 point some billion results. And Dave gave that away. I mean, he didn't try to make money on it, and sure enough, we can.
You didn't mean look it up on Wikipedia, though. You meant look it up on Google.
I looked it up on Google. It means there are that many sites probably that have it, right?
I think you just said Wikipedia, though.
I did. Well, there we go. So I'm looking it up. The weird Wikipedia
stuff like
here.
That all
but
the
I think
time.
Wikipedia. Wikipedia is one of those things too, and yeah. I mean, so I can look up.
Well, we need more of that.
Open
then.
Leaks.
So
and,
where yeah, you, so, we were talking about this before.
Yeah.
So like, where should we go, Doc? What's the next thing that we should do?
Well, when we depends on which we were talking about, yeah. We were talking about something earlier.
What do you want to do?
Oh, what I want to do,
yeah.
I want to open up microblogging. That's what I want to do as of today.
Talk
because
about
I,
that.
Yeah. So yeah, I went to look up something on Twitter this morning that I had written about a few weeks ago, and not only did I get a fairly standard Twitter fail of this can't be done, but it also said basically it told me that the word that I was looking up is too old.
Yeah.
That was before Twitter failed completely. And that sent me to a status page that says, we're incredibly sorry. And so I just put up a blog post that says, the internet doesn't do this. And
but the internet does do this.
Well,
when you look at it through that lens, it does do it.
Well, right? I don't see Twitter as the internet.
Right.
And I think Twitter is a thing on the internet. But there are things that are net-wide
Well,
that,
the question is,
that
what
we
happens when somebody like WikiLeaks pushes Twitter far enough that they actually have to shut somebody down for political reasons.
Well, there's
that's when everybody when the wake up call is going to be pretty clear.
Remember the first time the shuttle blew up? Okay, the first time we heard about what they call Crit-1 failures. There, in other words, if this thing fails, it all goes down.
Right.
And the internet was built so we don't have those kind of things. Right.
And
but Twitter is built so we can have that. Google is built so we can have that. Google can fail.
Well, this
Yahoo
is weird disconnect. And I have a friend at the New York Times who said that they can't use like any of these popular hosting services like Amazon, because they can't be shut down when they do something that, is a little too controversial for one of these tech companies. And then I thought, well, why are you using Twitter so much then? Don't you see that there's that problem there as well? I mean, And eventually, I think it's going to become clear that you can have outages of all kinds. When you talk about net neutrality, a lot of people seem to think net neutrality should only apply to the pipes that are, running, that Comcast runs or Verizon runs. But why shouldn't it matter what pipes Twitter and Google and Netflix run, for example? Or, why aren't those important pipes, too? I mean, if you look at the user agreements these guys have, you're not getting any guarantees.
Oh, no, they're called contracts of adhesion. That means that they can nail you down while they're free to change whatever
right,
they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those are unenforceable and unconscionable, and we will blow them up. I'm working on that one.
Are you? Tell us how you're doing.
Yeah, no, I love that
This
one.
Is what's really become clear to me. It shouldn't have taken WikiLeaks to show it, but it did, that we're a long way from having an open web, and we're a long way from really being able to count on the internet when it really counts. And that's why WikiLeaks is so huge, in addition to what it's saying about journalism, about civilization extending the power to publish to everyone. In addition to that, it shows us how far we have to go with the internet.
We won't get all the way there
either.
I mean, people say they don't want socialized medicine, and yet, medicine is by its nature has to be socialized. There have to be decisions that are made for society at large. We're going to fight this disease, but we're not going to fight that one. There's like best practices that say, when you get to this stage, it's time for palliative care, it's, we're no longer trying to cure you, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, nobody gets the individual treatment out of the medical system, so it's kind of a joke to think that you could ever get non-socialized medicine. It's inherently socialized. And when you have
the ideology of individual treatment is huge.
Well, we'd like to think that the medical system can care about us in our moment of need, but the truth is that it doesn't.
It doesn't.
And with 6 billion people on the planet, you can't get an internet that's free. I mean, it just isn't going to happen. Perhaps for some people it can be free. You know, one question, one idea that came up in an email this morning, and it's the first time I've ever seriously considered this possibility, and it tells you how, you know, deep into this we are right now, is that building a shadow internet, where you use all the protocols of the internet, but you don't use any of the hardware of the internet. In other words, you just start from scratch. Pretend we're in 1970, and there is no internet, right? Now, Doc, you and I want to communicate. So, you know, what we do is we get a phone connection, and we use some variant of TCP/IP that they don't understand. Then we have given up communicating with everybody else, but at least
TCP/IP at least makes it possible for us if we agree we're going to use TCP/IP, we can get to each other, right?
Right.
So I mean,
DNS has been hacked so badly by the government.
It's now a one failure point.
DNS is the failure point. Yep.
Well, and DNS
is one of them. Yeah.
They are really screwing with it right now, big time.
Yeah.
Especially with the BitTorrent stuff now. I mean, they're running totally scared.
Oh yeah, the government, if they don't like you, can you go to that site? They've gone into DNS, and all of a sudden you get this thing, this page that says this is no longer up because we don't like it.
Yeah.
It's accused of something, and there's no probable cause listed, nothing else like that. It's really very
and draconian. Guys like the three of us, we can scream all we want, and they know that it isn't going to matter.
Sure.
They know nobody listens to us, right?
It does matter. I mean, what matters is that the protocols themselves are open, and what we build on the protocols can be open or closed. Yeah. DNS, because of its design, because of the domain name service, because there are these single points in the middle of it that can be choked off, isn't that open. It is a crit one failure point. So, I mean, it could be that what we need is something that bypasses that in the long run. I think it's important to remember the internet that we know, if we date it from the arrival of the graphical browser, is like 15, 16 years old. It's a sophomore in high school. It's not old enough to drink or drive. You know, it's still early. You know, Google's not at the end of times. Facebook's not at the end of times. Twitter's not at the end of times. We can make this what we want it in the long run. And I think the horse is out of the barn. So, I mean, I think the freedom horse is out of the contained barn in too many places. That's why WikiLeaks can thrive, but we need more WikiLeaks. We need more workarounds.
I had a conversation this morning with a pretty well-educated, well-informed person who asked me a question. He said, well, what if, this guy's from Boston, what if there was a leak about some misbehavior of doctors at Massachusetts General Hospital, and then in the process of exposing this, they also exposed the patient health records of innocent people, you know, mm-hmm. Thousands of them. So I said, well, what does that have to do with WikiLeaks? And he said, well, they just released 250,000, State Department communiques. And I said, well, they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah. I don't know how much freedom is being discussed when even well-informed, well-educated people think that, you know.
It's really important to some journalists that people think that,
mm-hmm.
even though it's not true.
Yeah.
Because they want to portray the difference between themselves and WikiLeaks as the difference between a dump, indiscriminate, that's usually the word that they use, indiscriminate dumper versus careful editor.
Right.
And so this essentially a lie that WikiLeaks has indiscriminately dumped 250,000 cables.
Well, you have Biden doing it, too.
Discriminately dumped it.
Yeah, they discriminately released about 2,000.
They're very discriminate.
Yeah.
And then you had The Guardian was making the decisions basically about what gets released. I mean,
yes. The Guardian and the other publishing partners.
But so much of it is The Guardian.
The Guardian's taking the lead.
AP's not doing a bad job either, by the way. A lot of the sort of follow-up work, they're digging into some of these things too. So I'd give them, an 8. I'd give The Guardian a 10.
Here's what I think is interesting about this, Dave and Doc. I founded my blog on a distinction between the press and the media. The press, to me, is a key social institution in a democracy that helps us understand what's going on, because without it, we can't have consent to the governed. We can't have a check on power. The media is the modern industrial communications complex that is mostly involved in the production of audiences and the buying and selling of mind share mm-hmm. in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And for a very long time, press and media overlap so much that we tended to talk about them as the same thing. Mm-hmm. But for a variety of reasons now, these two things are being pulled apart. And one of them is we see that the media is actually very, very closely aligned with the state. And when the state says jump, media companies have to jump, like Amazon or, you know, service providers or telcos or, you know, big corporations, that they actually aren't going to be the ones to oppose the state. Whereas the press has to be able to do that, or it doesn't really have any function.
Right.
And so what's happening is that this broader press sphere, of which blogging and the internet and WikiLeaks and voluntary organizations and individuals, as well as civil society groups like Reporters Without Borders, right? This new unfolding and growing press sphere is pulling the establishment press toward it, while the media companies show that they are less and less reliable
right.
as homes for the press. And the old press, the institutional press, the Bill Keller press, is kind of like looking around and saying, well, where's our home? Because the state isn't going to help us, right? The media companies are disinvesting in us.
Bill Keller ought to be outstretching his arms to the internet and saying, please, may I join you?
Right, and that's...
may I be part of your cause?
Yes. And that's where this lie of the indiscriminate dumping is so important,
right.
because it separates...
And my friend in Boston was listening to the media. My friend in Boston was listening to Wolf Blitzer and Howard Kurtz and you know, all the columnists in the New York Times, people who are spinning this stuff for whatever purpose, you know. And he wasn't, you know, what was really interesting about the WikiRiver exercise was that it was actually really easy to find the press. You know, it wasn't hard. They weren't hiding, okay? But they weren't in plain sight either. And you would have to have sorted through dozens of non-WikiLeaks stories, hundreds of, a ratio of 100 to 1, basically.
Right.
But once you had it all, like the lens really focused on that one story, and, you know, there were like really basically 10 feeds that you needed to have. Once you had those 10, the story just pops right up.
Right.
And now there's a flow to it, and it's going somewhere, and it's developing. And if more people could experience this, okay, if there was some way to say, look, what you're getting there is a diet of garbage. They're lying to you, and they're spinning you, and, you know.
So Dave, a question. So using WikiRiver or something else of anybody's creation, can you make a distinction looking at the flow of stories between the press as it in its current incarnation, as Jay's defined its distinction, the media, which is on the one hand, and the descendants of the press, which has a sense of responsibility to it, and a sense of public purpose, and a sense of...
I don't have any of the media in there. I never felt compelled to put them in there.
Okay, so it
they weren't covering the story. They were...
Yeah,
they were... Yeah, I mean, it's hands...
It's an interesting thing.
It's curated, Doc.
So
it's that great word that everybody's using.
Yes, great. You know, they do it live. That's even more interesting. But I only see TV in hotels, and generally I don't even turn it on. When I do turn it on, I'll watch sports generally, you know, but...
I can get 5 minutes into a news broadcast.
But I'll tell you, you watch the local news, which I watched here for a few minutes, and here's an interesting thing. I watched it with my kid, and we thought, oh my God, it looks like the same thing that you see on the back of the front seat of the subway cab, of the cab in New York, which is garbage, essentially. You've got a garbagey thing that could take your credit card.
It's garbage.
And it's annoying, and you want to hit the off button, but it won't go away. It's like the glowing rectangle that won't go away. And it's so
bad.
What
glowing rectangle?
Oh, you need a glowing rectangle everywhere. You know, that your phone is a glowing rectangle. It's like the Onion story.
Is that what it is?
99% of Americans spend 90% of their time staring at a glowing rectangle.
Well, I raise my hand on that one.
Exactly.
I usually have five or six.
You've got two glowing rectangles right in front of you.
I always welcome another one in my life any day.
Well, here's the scary possibility, Doc, that the media increasingly, with its glowing rectangles, controls attention. The press and the press sphere that's emerging has the information, but information and attention never hook up. And therefore, the state can ignore the information that's coming out about it because attention is being controlled elsewhere. Well, that's the nightmare.
This is really interesting, the distinction between information and attention, because a few years ago, I was exploring it, and I think I talked to you about this, and we've blogged back and forth about it. But information is not a commodity. Information is the name we have for something that changes us, because its root word is to form. You know, if
right.
You know what I call authority is what I give other people the right to form me with. They become authors. We become authors of each other. Hmm. I think that's what we do with the press, as you were putting it. You know, I'm willing to be influenced by you and by Dave and by the New York Times and a few other sources I trust, including Wikipedia. For that, I mean, WikiLeaks.
Right.
I should be staring at WikiLeaks.
They really have saying, hijacked the language.
I know.
There, haven't they?
I know. It's really. It's,
it must
piss
off
funny.
Jimmy Wales now.
I wonder what it does to Ward Cunningham.
Well, I think Ward Cunningham is beyond.
He's beyond.
Like,
He's
kind of a laid back guy. I don't think
he's very laid back.
Your point is to inform is to form.
The
yeah,
point
it's
is
beautiful,
to form.
Isn't
it's like
beautiful,
it's worth forming you. And here's the thing, because I think what the media does, because it's looking for advertising and it's looking for making money, is just wants your attention. And that's what,
right.
For that matter, that's what, for the most part, what advertising wants. It wants to change your mind, I guess, since you want to buy something. But it exists. It has this, there's always been with the commercial media, this distinction between their audience, their consumers and their customers. Their customers are the advertisers, and their consumers are who they sell to the advertisers, because we, in fact, become the product that's sold to the advertisers rather than the actual customers of it.
Right.
And
if you don't pay for the product, you are the product.
Right. And there's a there's an imperative there, which is all about just getting your attention.
Right.
And that's why so much of it is just crap. It's just yelling at you. You
right.
know? But here's where I wonder about it. So my sister reports that she can't. She lives in North Carolina, and in a small city in North Carolina, you can't go to a single doctor's office. You can't go anywhere without seeing Fox News. Fox News is like the telescreen in 1984. You know, everywhere you go, there's Fox News looking at you. And mm-hmm. and there are people who will go into the doctor's office. If it's not on Fox News, they'll switch it to Fox News. And I understand. You know, so the military, right? They turned off, or some part of it turned off. The New York Times, because they carried WikiLeaks, but they wouldn't turn off Fox News,
right?
You know, which will spend 3 hours of Glenn Beck talking, comparing George Soros to Hitler,
well, that's
or whatever.
Serious
it was.
Lies. I mean, that's
yeah,
they're
I mean,
not
just,
talking
I mean, just,
subtle
just
lies.
Serious lies. All
we're
right.
talking big
and,
time
and it's and
live
it's like
factory.
It's so known and proven that Fox News is full of shit, and it tries to be full of shit a lot of the day. You know, I've talked to some people from Fox News. No, it's like a lot of we're only full of shit some of the time. You know, we're most,
all right.
But
I want to give you my
it's
problem.
Propaganda.
Though.
It's all propaganda.
Right, so how do
right?
we? So let's. It doesn't matter where it is. Suppose we have a website that has high quality, to use Jay's distinction, press on it. Okay. And it's getting, you know, a human consumable number of stories a day. So you only have to go there once a day, and you're more or less informed on sort of maybe even just a slice of what's going on. You get your sports in there, too, you mm-hmm. know. Like, the Giants apparently lost hugely
it's
yesterday.
It's just horribly,
to Philadelphia.
Horribly, yes, sir.
Philadelphia's beating New York in a lot of sports. I don't know if you
know. I know, and they used
really
the dog killer to do it. Not everything.
No, kidding. Anyway, yeah. aside. But so now, all right. So we can produce this. How do we get people to watch it? How do I get my friend in Boston who is would watch it if he knew it was existed?
If Bill Keller was here, would you say that you have that with the New York Times? The New York Times is that a lot of people will go online. They'll look at the New York Times.
Look, you guys are being naive.
Of course, I'm deliberately being
yeah,
naive.
Okay, deliberately.
But I'm asking for vision, you know?
Well, I don't know how to answer your question, but what's happening is that the people who run the state and who operate in the secret world increasingly don't care that they're exposed by the press because they know that the intention economy isn't pointed that way. And whereas the model of exposure that even Julian Assange is working with is that if things come out that are outrageous enough, they will command attention. They will force the attention economy onto them. And where I think we're going is that the people in power understand that the attention economy can kind of run outside of history. It can just be a loop. It can just go on its own. And information that's even shocking information, delegitimating information, information that blows a hole in everything the government has been saying
is
survivable.
Absolutely. We've seen this.
It's totally survivable.
And yeah, so there was that moment in the Bush.
It is the telescreen then.
Right. It was that moment in the Bush presidency where they said, well, we're not reality based, right? That was the moment when the guy came out from behind the curtain and he said, I don't care if you see me.
In 2004, I've written obsessively about it.
It's an obsessive moment.
Yeah.
What I was asking was a different question. I wasn't asking how can we reform the government to let us do this, because they let us do it. It's not a threat.
Right.
To
You're asking how can we align the attention?
How can I get my friend in Boston, this guy who is, you know, just serving as an example, enough of his attention so that we don't have to have these moments when I realize we have the answer, you're just not paying enough attention to get it. You're forming the wrong opinion because you're only allowing the nonsense, the garbage to come into
your
brain.
You're looking at false radar images.
Yeah,
the garbage images. You're looking at crap.
Well, the only way we're going to get it is when we start to realize that it's people we know who inform us, not the media.
Hmm. Right, but we need
social, not the industry.
See, the guys who are like jealous of I that's the way I look at it is they're jealous of. Now maybe this isn't the most productive thing to say of Assange. Is that he has the potential of being that lightning rod that could command enough attention so that at least the people who are willing to make an investment. I'm not willing to even watch, Keith Olbermann anymore or Rachel Maddow. It's just too inflammatory. It's too off topic. It's too manipulative. What I would like to have is a steady stream of things that explain to me the way things that I know about how the world works. There's no surprises to me in any of the stories I'm reading on WikiLeaks. These are all the things I've figured out myself.
There are no surprises.
They're not surprises. I knew that, the U.S. government has, clients in the Middle East who would love to see Iran, go away, even though they all hate Israel, right? I mean, I understand all these things, and seeing evidence of it, it just helps me understand what I already understood.
So here's a question for both of you guys.
Well, it's good to be a little naive, by the way, Jay. Sometimes you get somewhere with it.
I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. So it's just a quick question for both of you guys, or for the audience that's not calling in at the moment, but it's something for people to think about. So let's say this guy who spilled the beans to Assange, I think his name is Bradley.
Manning.
Yeah, who's been held in tortuous conditions in jail.
They
had him on a suicide watch for a while. He's a gay guy. He's got, there's a lot of stuff going on there that's just starting to come out sort of about the guy. Doesn't matter. Let's say he sends up, he was talking to Assange. Assange is indictable. He's extraditable. The UK sends him to the US. He's tried in the US. What happens? In other words, where I'm going with this is he a hero or do the Fox Newses of the world prevail, as it were?
They probably prevail.
What is the?
I think he gets disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a trial, but a good chance that
like the war in Iraq. They had the war anyway, right?
Yeah. I don't think that there's going to be enough uproar to prevent the government from doing what it wants to with him if he is extradited. The fight has to be before extradition. Yeah. And that might be winnable. But no once fight, he's in the U.S. grasp.
Who's willing to fight? I don't see anybody willing to do that.
And the proof of that is that they're using the person who actually committed the crime according to U.S. law, which is the person passing...
Right, to inform on him.
To get Assange.
Right, yeah.
That is extraordinary. Because you've got the person who violated the law in custody already.
Yeah.
Why don't we move on to Delicious? I think it's something that
Delicious,
all three of us would
be interested. We have 5 minutes left. It's a good thing to leave a little bit for Delicious.
Yahoo announced that it was going to sunset Delicious. This is a service a lot of people rely on. It was upsetting to me because I use it.
And do you? You still use it?
I don't use it so much to store my links, but I use it for research. I go there. The tags, I find certain tags are really interesting, really good.
And you do that still to this day? Really? Uh-huh. Doc, do you use Delicious?
I tried a bunch of times, and it was a pain in my butt, and it was just too difficult. And then you needed the browser plug-in, and it never appeared. You know, it appeared for a while, and then it disappeared. Too much labor, too labor-intensive. And also, it's just another silo. It's out there somewhere. It's a single point of failure.
There you go. You got your clear moral of the story. You know, you put your data in a silo. Sooner or later, Carol Bartz decides that she needs to kill something. I mean, that's what really happened. You want to know what really happened? Okay. Is that they have they're like in deep caca over there in Yahoo, right? They need to cut, and they need to cut seriously. Problem is they can't cut anything. There's nothing that they can cut because everything they have are these kinds of web services that people actually depend on. So they have to pick the one that they think that the fewest people will scream about. And so this is Delicious and my blog log, and there was one other, I think, that they...
Yeah, there's several others, but Delicious was the big one. So
the thing that they do this with Flickr is...
Well, how do we avoid being in this position is really the question.
You invest in open things. I mean, you know, you need multiple Deliciouses.
We need to have a way to have this conversation, Doc, because it's like...
Here's a word, substitutability. It's really simple. It's an economic concept. Is it a substitutable service? Can I pull my data out of here, put it somewhere else? I can do that with my blog. We can move a blog from here to there. You can't move your Delicious here from here to there. I can move everything out of Flickr. To Yahoo's credit, they've done a good enough job with Flickr. They've got a nice API. I can suck all 40-some thousand photos out of Flickr and stick them somewhere else.
Have you actually done it?
I actually did it with a thing called Tableau, where it was really great. It was a nice symbiosis. Tableau got bought by HP, and now it's kind of languishing, but it was easy to do, and it was
I wrote scripts to do it, too.
Their API is good.
The problem, though, is that the links point into Flickr land, you know, and if you pointed to
you
your
lose,
Flickr
you break,
stuff...
If they die, you lose the links. And maybe what we need to do is create the way to do it on your own stuff. I mean, that's
ideally... Yeah, well, we've been talking... This is Rebooting the News, viewed from the other side. We've been talking about this since day one, basically. It's like... You know, do you put your stuff inside of corporate silos, or do you find another way to do it? And the answer is, it's the long way around to find another way to do it. But it's the only way that you can have any protection. I mean, this is what we're fighting for, right?
Outside the corporate silo, stateless, and not the exclusive possession of a profession. That's where we want our.
What do you mean by the exclusive possession of a profession?
Well, I mean that the profession of journalism can't be allowed to monopolize the practice of journalism.
Right.
And it isn't increasingly able to do that. But
same
I'm just
thing
saying
with
we
tech,
got,
by the way.
We got to break the monopoly of the tech industry. We got to break the monopoly of the media company.
90
the
seconds.
The state and these professions that all try to lock up practices that we need to be a public. And we're going to need to just smash every one of those knowledge monopolies.
So, Jay, what are you willing to give up to do this? That's what you have to start thinking. I asked Doc the same question before the show because we were talking about this. And Doc, you know, I said, you know, you're willing to have it be a little bit awkward at first, be a little bit extra work to do your stuff?
I would give up to Twitter. I mean,
we have to give up something. You know, just like Yahoo had to give up something.
Well, I'm willing to pay. I realize that now. That is important.
I'll pay money. All kinds of
I'm thinking that we could bootstrap at least one of these things. You know, one of the things I noticed, by the way, and I wrote this piece, is that the way I use Twitter actually has a lot in common with what Delicious does, that in a way, all these services we invent are doing the same thing over and over and over again. One of the reasons I didn't use Delicious initially is because my blogging software did that. I didn't need to use Delicious. And then I realized, why is everybody else using it? Because their blogging software doesn't do links.
On that note...
Wait, we can...
Doc, thanks for joining us.
We can
see you after the holidays, Dave.
Yeah, Jay, thanks much. Happy
right
holidays, on. Everybody.
10 seconds.
That's it. We don't get there.